those words. She knew the signs for water and for bird, and the first time she saw a duck landing on a lake, she signed Waterbird. That displayed a synthesis of knowledge. So you see, she was obviously very intelligent. I was allowed to go into her compound, to enter a room with her all alone. As I walked into that room, I was reminded that she was an imposing, powerful animal. Smaller gorillas have been known to tear off men's arms in anger. I'm not often afraid, but truthfully, I was frightened. There's a form of acting that teaches, feel it and say it, and that feeling will be revealed through your words. The English form is quite different. Say it, and then you feel it. To deal with my fear of this magnificent animal, as I got closer and closer to her, I found myself saying, "I love you, Coco, I love you." I said it earnestly and honestly, and I looked directly in her eyes as I spoke. I crouched over a little to show submission, moving forward rather than backward to show I was not afraid. Over and over I repeated, "I love you, Coco, I love you." And as I said it, I began to feel that love. Finally, I stopped directly in front of her and looked into her deep brown eyes, and I saw her furrowed brow and her enormous hands. "I love you, Coco." And with that, she reached out and grabbed me by my balls and looked me right in the eyes, and after a slight pause, in a substantially higher voice, I tried to repeat, "I love you, Coco." Obviously, these words had more significance than a few seconds earlier. Her handler, standing just outside the room, said, "Stand very still. She wants you to go to her bedroom." So I stood very still because I did not want to go to her bedroom. I think it's fair to say that few people in history have ever stood as still as I did at that moment. Meanwhile, in the adjoining compound, a young gorilla, who they hoped would mate with Coco, was pounding on the door like a jealous husband. There I was, caught in the eternal triangle, with the gorilla holding on to my rapidly shrinking scrotum. Eventually she got bored. Starting this book with that story would enable me to inform the reader that it's not going to be limited to my professional career, that it will also include stories about all the extraordinary opportunities I've been given to explore the world. I'd discuss all the amazing experiences I've had, from that dark night in Africa when I pursued a wild elephant, to the afternoon a helicopter left me more alone than I've ever been in my life on top of a 20,000-foot-high glacier, and even to that memorable moment when I saw aliens in the desert. And it would also demonstrate that there are going to be a lot of laughs in this book, most of them at my expense. But then I realized that people know me primarily from the work I've done as an actor, so it wouldn't be effective as a beginning. So I decided not to begin that way either. Then I had a great idea. I was going to start the book by quoting the lyrics to a song I had written about the truly tragic death by drowning of my beautiful wife, Noreen Shatner. My love was supposed to protect her. It didn't. My love was supposed to heal her. It didn't. You had said, "Don't leave me," and I begged you not to leave me. We did. Opening the book that way would be so meaningful to me, beginning with the great tragedy of my life. And it would immediately let readers know that this is to be a truthful book. But it would also be such a sad beginning when my life has been filled with so much joy. And of course, I'm not known for my singing. In fact, there are those who believe my performance of Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds may be the worst version of a Beatles song ever recorded. Not me, of course. And this is such a personal story that it needs to be told in its entirety. So certainly I couldn't begin my book that way. There is one extremely well-known phrase that I definitely decided I would not use to begin this book. "Beam me up, Scotty." In fact, I am determined that this phrase will not appear anywhere in this book. The beginning, I knew, needed to catch the interest of the reader within a few words, to engage their curiosity, to make them wonder, perhaps, what the hell is he talking about? Which led to, I arrived in New York City for the first time in my life, in an Indian outrigger canoe, having paddled all the way from Montreal. I liked that. But it didn't seem to convey the essence of my life. Somehow it seemed too gimmicky, too clever, so I knew I couldn't use that. Maybe later in the first chapter, I decided. It occurred to me that perhaps I should open this book with a description of the day I took my beautiful horse, Sultan's Great Day, for his final walk in the pasture.